All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast. It's Wednesday. It's January 2nd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Oh, we're back. It was a little bit of a holiday hiatus for us, but we're back on the NBA podcast, ready to break down a big Wednesday in basketball, taking a look at cash game lineups for DraftKings and FanDuel, some betting opportunities that are starting to stand out from our system. But, buddy, you happy to be back? It's been a long time since we jumped on. We talked a lot about basketball, but it's been a while since we jumped on the podcast. You feel like 2019 is going to be your year for basketball?
2018 was kind of my year for basketball, to be honest. So hopefully, I'm hoping that 2019 just keeps the train going. No better way, no like more iconic way to end the 2018 basketball season for me, like the 2018 part on New Year's Eve, than being in there setting the lineups, having Anthony Davis everywhere. Well, everywhere on FanDuel, and then in half the lineups on DraftKings. And then him getting scratched at 8:01 for an 8 o'clock game on New Year's Eve, just legitimately perfect, and cashing three out of those four lineups anyway. So the one on DraftKings with him didn't cash, the two on FanDuel did, and the one we didn't have him in lineup two on DraftKings, so it got there. But it was just a great way to rock out the old year and welcome in the new one.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when I saw that the next day when I was not really following basketball that night, but to see the FanDuel lineups cashing even with Davis seemed just complete to have him be the drop. I mean, I know he's pretty highly owned, so
yeah, but we had some other, I mean, we were like kind of all in on the Stars and Scrubs thing for that night, so we had like Maxi Kleber, who also randomly didn't get the start. Wesley Matthews came back unexpectedly after being questionable, so we got hit both ways, and for those lineups to still get there, it was pretty nuts.
All right, we're going to break down, we're going to go game by game through a decently heavy Wednesday in basketball. That's typically how it goes. Wednesdays and Fridays are the big nights here for NBA. We'll go through some of the injury news, which there's plenty of it for this slate. Some games that are still waiting on lines that we'll kind of just break down the reasoning why and try to make a little bit of sense of where some teams are going to kind of go tonight with some guys that haven't really been injured so far this season and they look like they're going to sit out. So we'll kind of break it down game by game and try to make sense of it leading into lineup lock. And then obviously the real nitty-gritty is done on our site about the hour and a half leading in to lineup lock. You can go to dfsr.com/deals to get started there and go join the chat room, get the optimal lineups, and you'll be all good to go. All right, Atlanta goes in and plays Washington. Washington is 5.5-point favorites. There's been a deal. So the news here, obviously, is that John Wall is going to be out the rest of the season with the heel issue. Mm-hmm. So unclear about how much better or worse that makes. I mean, it clearly makes them worse, but they were already playing pretty poorly. FanDuel has really corrected the pricing on guys like, I mean, really, and on everybody. Satoransky, Beal, Jeff Green, and Thomas Bryant specifically see pretty heavy price increases. On DraftKings, not as much. Some of those guys are pretty cheap. It looks like they're going to get Otto Porter back. How viable are these guys still on either site? I mean, some of them are getting pretty expensive on FanDuel. Satoransky is like $4,600 on DraftKings right now. Thomas Bryant's $4,700. This guy plays like has played more than 30 minutes the last couple games. How willing to go back to the well on these Wizards guys are you, knowing that the prices have come up some, but they're still running pretty tight rotations?
Yeah, you're going to see a huge ownership on Satoransky, Bryant, probably Jeff Green too. He's still just $4,400 on DraftKings. I think those prices are just too low for whatever reason. Their guy was like taking the holidays off. I'm like actually convinced that this is the real, by the way, that some of the prices were just sitting there. And so somebody just set the algorithm to like plus or minus 200 on everybody's price every day. And like, we'll figure this out in the new year because you were just getting values on those Washington guys all throughout the holidays and you're still getting it now. And so I guess the DraftKings guy just like doesn't work remotely or hasn't stepped into the office yet because those prices are an abomination. On FanDuel, it looks a lot closer to me. I think the only guy, and this is actually nuts because Thomas Bryant was seeing like 5% ownership on a $4,000 price tag, but right. Thomas Bryant's creeping up there now, even at $6,600, just because he's been such a monster on a per minute basis recently. And our algorithm and probably everyone's are going to have a really hard time with a guy who, you know, played relatively few minutes and no minutes in this exact role, you know, playing alongside the starters, playing huge volume, being out there getting into the rhythm. So if you think he's a 33 to 34 minute player, he very well could be a $6,600 player, you know. One fantasy point per minute's not outside of bounds for him. So yeah, just keeping an eye on it.
Yeah, it seems like the trust at least to have him run like sort of in crunch time is there. 36 and 30 minutes over the last two games. He was crazy good against the Hornets with 21 and 10. It's close. There's a couple other center considerations here, and it's always a little bit of there's always like a little bit of, I don't know if it's dissonance, but like when you see the price having increased so much, trying to figure out, I think that will turn people off, and then they may just not be evaluating that. That's still probably something of a value on him at 6,600. If the minutes continue to trend the way they are, not to say they're going to keep trending up, but just that he plays 30 or more, 6,600 probably is still too low. The one thing to keep an eye on here too, obviously, I think I mentioned it before, is that Otto Porter is questionable tonight, he's probable to come back. That probably cuts in to minutes around guys like Green and Ariza a little bit.
For sure.
But without Markieff Morris there, because they sometimes played him at the five, I think that you'll still probably see minutes at O'Brien. And then look, they have the best matchup you can get against Atlanta. The Atlanta runs at the fastest pace in the league, one of the worst defensive efficiencies. They are still without Terry and Prince. John Collins is probable to play. It looks like Dwayne Dedman is questionable, but probably trending more toward doubtful. Anything you like here on the Atlanta side? They did start Daniel Hamilton last game, but that was really kind of just in starter name only. Bembry still did get the minutes. Anything you like for the Hawks before we move on?
Yeah, this is kind of a weird team right now. I like playing people against the Hawks usually. That's the main thing I like about them. The minutes have just been so unpredictable. You know, people have tried to mess around with who's going to get the center minutes. You know, some nights it's Len, some nights it's just not. It doesn't always have to correlate with foul trouble for him, even though that is a big issue for him. Bembry, he was very highly owned. I think in the Cleveland game, he wound up doing it on 20, but just on 29 minutes, right? So he goes 27 minutes, 35, 29, and then 27. So it's just a very mixed bag from him. And, you know, he can fall out of favor in terms of being involved in the offense too. And I don't know, the Hawks to me are one of these teams where you can try to read the tea leaves as much as you want, and it doesn't always get you very much for the effort. Like Daniel Hamilton started against the Pacers. Some people took a shot on that. He played 15 minutes. You know, yeah. This is just a team that's almost from top to bottom, you know, with both a combination of some guys that are just completely overpriced for my tastes, like John Collins or Trae Young, and then a bunch of guys who could be value on the right night if you happen to guess right on the minutes, but nothing cash game viable for me.
Yeah, I had said that in the chat leading into that smaller slate with Hamilton. I was like, don't even bother with this guy. The guy had never played. They just kind of threw him in the starting lineup because they wanted to keep Bembry coming in off the bench. All right, let's keep moving on. Miami goes in and plays the Cavs. Miami is 6-point road favorites going against Cleveland here. They're going to be without Dragic for a while. They made Justice Winslow basically the point guard. That didn't translate into all the minutes that I thought it would. It does look like James Johnson is probable to come back here. Deion Waiters has actually been moved up to questionable. So it's hard to, the guy hasn't played in forever, so it's hard to imagine he really comes in and plays much, if at all, going into this game. And then we have Cleveland. They're going to be without Nwaba and Zizek, but they did sign Patrick McCaw, and it looks like he's going to come in right away and start playing. So I'm not exactly sure what that does to some of these Cleveland minutes. What are your thoughts on this game? There's two guys our system's kind of calling out here, and it's Tyler Johnson a little bit on FanDuel and Hassan Whiteside a little bit on DraftKings. Anything you like in this game? And then what do you want to do with like this McCaw thing to Cleveland? Does that move the needle on any of these guys for you?
I guess new players coming to a team almost always makes the rest of the guys worse, just because those minutes have to come from somewhere, and it can be unpredictable where they're going to come from. Again, especially on a bad team like Cleveland that already can be prone to unpredictable rotations from time to time. As far as Tyler Johnson goes, I'm not super interested. Again, he's been coming off the bench. The minutes will come and go in the same way that bench minutes do. I think he's more comfortable in that role as like the ignite a fire guy off the bench, so it's probably best for them basketball wise. But from a DFS perspective, I don't know. For me, I need that little extra motivation to play someone when I know I'm going to be seeing a zero by their name 9 minutes into the first quarter. And with Johnson, I just don't think he crosses that threshold for me. Winslow, he's another guy to me. And this has really been a very common thing that I've noticed this year across DFS in general, is that there will be guys who just hit a price point that's too high. And then like for maybe good reason, maybe something changes. They have one big game, or, you know, they see big ownership one night. Winslow's totally in that category for me right now. He's two very good games in his last five, and three games that he would have absolutely killed you. And like the rest of these Miami guys too, the minutes can come and go in spite of him being named a starter. And I would imagine that he's inversely correlated with Johnson, where when Johnson's running well off the bench, it probably feels nice to have a guy who's actually a point guard on the court, and, you know, maybe Winslow loses a minute here or there. And I don't see it on the Miami guys. I'm not really excited here at all.
It's funny, Whiteside has played, he's played 28 or more minutes in four of his last five games, except the one of those games that he didn't get there was the 18 minutes against this very same Cleveland team on Friday. So right. He was in a little bit of foul trouble. At 6,700, this Cleveland's still very much without much in the way of defensive bigs, like especially when they're starting Larry Nance at the center. You know, he's a good defender, but not really going to be able to guard Whiteside for like long periods of time. So I think at 6,700 on DraftKings, I'd be willing to entertain it on Whiteside, with the idea that, look, the guy always has a 20-minute game in him, and it's going to be almost impossible to see when it's coming, and then all of a sudden you have him, and it's just kind of there. So that'd be my one little caveat on Whiteside, and I get why he's coming in. Like right now, he's coming like 20% of our lineups on DraftKings at that price. Okay, Dallas and Charlotte. Dallas goes into play Charlotte. Charlotte, 2.5-point home favorites. With the news here that they're going to be without, looks like they're going to be without Cody Zeller. Zeller's already been ruled out. And Jeremy Lamb is doubtful. So that's a lot of starting minutes, just kind of up for grabs, I would say. I'm not exactly sure. I kind of hedged the minutes at this point. Willie Hernangómez could get the start for Zeller. We could talk about him in a second. Malik Monk came in and played a lot of minutes for Lamb. I'm not totally convinced he comes in and starts. Like now we have not seen games without Lamb this season. So, and Lamb was playing a decent amount of minutes. I don't know if you. This is a situation where we just want to wait for starting news to kind of make a determination. I suppose we'll get it before lock. How interested are you in guys like Monk, in guys like, I mean, Batum maybe just plays more minutes. Maybe they start Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and move Batum to the two. Like, I'm not exactly sure. And then what would you do? Where would we want to set Willie Hernangómez's minutes if we found out that he was the starter?
Yeah, so you've also got Bismack Biyombo lurking there. He did play 6 minutes in that last game when Zeller, I think he fractured his hand, by the way, so he's out multiple weeks. But yeah, Bismack lurking, he's another guy, high-energy guy that can come off the bench or start on a moment's notice and be really, really good. We've seen him put up great totals in the past out of the starting role and even just when he plays randomly 20 minutes. Hernangómez is kind of a funny one because he's more expensive than Zeller, right? So were you excited about Zeller on the same price point? Because if not, you're probably not going to get something too dissimilar from what Hernangómez is going to give you. The one thing about Hernangómez, at least early on, it seems as though that the rebounding is probably a little bit stronger. I mean, he's got 10, 11, and 8 rebounds in 23, 14, and 13 minutes. So if he's really that level of prolific rebounder, I suppose you could see him be worth this price in a more consistent way than Zeller was, but he's not as polished offensively, and I think that there's definitely some trade-off there. So he's far from a slam dunk, I guess is what I want to say. If he were like 4,000, you'd play him in every single lineup. At 5,400, I'm going to probably give him minutes similar to what Zeller was getting minutes-wise, and then, you know, so like in that 26 to 28 range, and let the system do its thing. It might spit him out. I mean, those rebounds really are a material thing, but yeah, at least at the beginning, it's not one I'm over the moon about.
Yeah, I mean, as a note, Hernangómez is only 3,800 on DraftKings, and so
play him on DraftKings.
Problem with DraftKings, right? It's not a problem, but one of the things with DraftKings right now is that they're just all the guys are cheap. Like it's like, so you get like so if you get if you rolled in Hernangómez at 3,800 and you thought he was going to get something like 23 minutes, you could probably think at something like 26 or 27 fantasy points at that. Like the guy does put up fantasy totals when given the minutes. And then, but then when you just have guys like Thomas Bryant at 4,700 and you have Satoransky at 4,600 and, I mean, Malik Monk, who's only 3,600, he can play a lot of minutes. There's just, at some point, there's just not any other ways to spend up. Like, so I think that's the only problem with on DraftKings is that, yes, you're going to find guys like Hernangómez, possibly the starter, possibly on another night, this would look like insane value. And now you're just trying to make a determination. Is it more valuable than all the other guys that seem to be great points per dollar plays? On the Dallas side, I wrote up Doncic because it did seem like shooting guard in particular on FanDuel was looking pretty thin. He's 7,800, so he's not exactly cheap. It just seemed like the player pool at shooting guard was not all that exciting. Could you see rostering a guy like him? He seems like a bit of an overpay at 7,800, especially because he never seems to play more than 34 minutes, and I really hate that from a cash game perspective because you just kind of know the ceiling of the minutes you're getting. And then at the same time, I'm also struggling to see what to do with shooting guard, at least this early. Guys like Bradley Beal are like almost 10K, and I think that's a little too much. What are your thoughts on Doncic real quick, and we'll move on?
Yeah, Doncic is a guy, you know, he falls back in that category of just perennially overpriced for the most part. I think at a $7,800 price tag, you really want 40-ish fantasy points out of him. I think it's doable in a game like this. I think, you know, if you think his normal rotation is something like 33 minutes, I think you can see him getting there. But for me, he's a guy who's priced at a point where I'm thinking about him in the very best matchups or when there's additional opportunity to go around. And the fact that Wesley Matthews is back now, that can't be great for Doncic's minutes either. Also, just in the category where, like, sometimes Doncic is just going to get the 35 minutes because Wes Matt's out and there's no one else to put in. You could see him, his rotation going from 33 to 35 minutes to like 31 to 33. And I don't know if that's where you want to be for cashing in.
It's more like I'm also just worried with Dennis Smith there. Like, because he just plays so much point guard now. Like, he's basically, I wonder how soon we are just going to see him just get relabeled to a point guard, at least on FanDuel, because that is what he plays. FanDuel doesn't seem to always care about like what the actual positions these guys play are. So it's like even just having Dennis Smith around and the fact that they're getting a little deeper at guard has me more worried in Doncic's minutes than like Wes Matthews in particular. And then the team just getting healthy in general. So I think at some point this season we'll see him moved over to a point guard designation. Two, I'm only interested in tonight because like I said, the shooting guard list on draft FanDuel it seems like a real problem. A lot of these guys are just way too expensive. So I think that might be where he ends up falling in. All right, going into the 7:30 games, the Pelicans face the Nets. We talked about Anthony Davis's getting sick, quote unquote sick, before the party that he went to New Year's Eve. Would be presumed, just like wanted to kind of get started early. And that was the way to do it was to sit out the game. But he is probable to play tonight. Do you think judging by some of the other value that we have going on in these lineups, one, do you think he is highly owned again, or do you think people are burned on him? Two, would you feel comfortable going back there just knowing this is Anthony Davis and he's probable with the illness, and he's got like the best matchup you can get for an opposing big? What are your thoughts on going back to Davis knowing you've been burned by him as recently as 2 days ago?
I think I'm going back to Davis in 2019, boys. Yeah. And I'm picturing the GIF.
I don't know how to pronounce it. I never know how to say that right. We're old. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that's fine. It was Fantasy Labs put it out. And it's just the classic one of like the guy shoveling money into the oven, you know?
Yeah.
Into the burner and with Anthony Davis's head on it. And that's how I kind of feel going into this slate playing Anthony Davis. But if there's usually what we get with Anthony Davis is people actually think to report and ask questions about whether he's going to play if he just missed the last game. So I suspect we'll get some reporting. And like we know with Davis, when they do play him, they're happy to play him 38 to 40 minutes. So I think in the best possible matchup, you know, there's blowout concern here, of course, but in the best possible matchup, assuming he does stay on the court, especially with so many cheap plays, then I think you're going to really think about it. Interestingly, right now, Davis not showing up on DraftKings. He's in currently lineup two. So I guess you could see him creeping up, especially if some of these, you know, we move away from some of these other really dirt cheap plays like Malik Monk and stuff like that. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, right now I would play Davis assuming we had news that he was going to play.
Yeah, I think I like the idea of stacking Davis and Randall together here. Like at Brooklyn, it's just so bad against opposing bigs, center in particular. These guys do rotate back and forth between the four and the five depending on what the rotation is and sort of like where they are in the flow of the offense. So I'm not really worried about like one guy getting more of like the center run in this case, if you're thinking about just defense versus position kind of stuff. So I do like stacking Randall and Davis together. They do take something of a usage hit over the course of the season, the more minutes they're on the court together, like they both eat into each other's productions, but the minutes have been so high that I think the floor is just so great in this matchup. So I could see, I think that if when it comes down to it, the thing I probably feel the most comfortable with on both sites, it's a little bit easier on DraftKings because of the multi-positional eligibility, but would be seeing Davis and Randall together in these lineups and just saying, okay, this is kind of where I want to land. And the rest of the Pelican guys, the guards are getting a little too overpriced. They did get Elfrid Payton back now. That does hurt probably the Jrue Holiday and the kills like the rest of, like the kills the some of the rest of their rotations. If you were like trying to get some small forward and shooting guard value out of those guys, Elfrid Payton back probably eats a little too much into this. On the Brooklyn side, they are without Rondae Hollis-Jefferson now. He's out for, I guess, the foreseeable future as well. They have not announced who is going to start for them. I did bump Ed Davis's minutes a little bit. He's pretty cheap. Makes for maybe an interesting FanDuel sort of punt play. Where do you want to go here? But they've also shown the willingness to like just start Jared Dudley, or just maybe they start Damari Carroll. Just because Hollis-Jefferson was a power forward and that Davis is labeled a power forward does not mean the Nets role that way in terms of their starting lineups. Is this a situation where if you saw any one of the guys I just mentioned, Dudley, Carroll, maybe Davis, in the starting lineup tonight, would you be willing to sort of go overboard on some of their minutes for the Nets, knowing how they run rotations, or that, like, any of those guys have any value to you in probably a pretty tough matchup against Davis and Randall here?
Yeah, I could see Carroll getting in there. 30 and 35 minutes in the last two games, 29 and 32 fantasy points on FanDuel. That seems totally doable for me. I mean, he's 5,100, and he's one of the only just like credible, could play on a real team players that the Nets have. So I think that he's a guy I could see stretching for. People like Dudley, and who was the other one that you asked about?
I said Carroll Harris. Davis. I said Ed Davis. Ed Davis is a guy that's played like up and like around. I could see him getting like 20 to 24 minutes. But the reason I mentioned him on that is because 20 to 24 minutes at Ed Davis at his price on FanDuel at a power forward position that is somewhat difficult to fill could have some value. That's kind of why I'm mentioning him specifically.
Yeah, it could. I mean, it's a big slate. I'd rather not do it. I guess if he were starting and I could count on 24 minutes, I could consider it. But yeah, Carroll would be my higher priority there. Dudley, you know, it can happen for him sometimes, but it can also just be being out on the court doing a whole lot of nothing too. So yeah, I'm not excited about the Nets, but I could see a case for Davis or Carroll.
Yeah, so I think I suspect we will have starting lineup information. Yeah, I know it's a half hour after lineups lock, but I do think we'll have that information going in there. So we'll adjust accordingly. That's one of the things that we do talk about in our chat room leading into is like how some of those if this then that things do tend to work out, and the Nets would be a situation that we definitely keep an eye on. Orlando goes in and plays Chicago. DJ Augustine sat out last game. They started Jerry and Grant, but he sort of split minutes with Isaiah Briscoe. And right now, Augustine, I believe, is just questionable right now. I'm not sure. I thought it would be one of those things that kind of mattered, but I'm not sure it really does. And the Chicago side, they threw Levine back in the starting lineup. This game is a really low total. For a big slate, this total right now is sitting at, barely over 200, 201.5, which I mean, as comparison, New Orleans and Brooklyn's at 230.5, Atlanta and Washington's at 230.5. So this game is almost 30 points less implied total than some of the other more fantasy viable. When you see that total, and just knowing how some of these teams operate, does this game... This game comes pretty close to a skip for me, but I'm not sure if you see something different.
No, I'm there. I think for this game, I'm basically just looking at, am I going to get increased opportunity with some late-breaking news? But otherwise, I'd be stunned if any of these guys show up in our lineups.
Yeah, I don't think, and I'm not even sure that's even late-breaking stuff, like short of like Vucevic sitting, which is not on the table right now, or even, I'm not even sure like who could really sit for Chicago that would make me all that excited. That made me all that excited to play some of the other guys. Like I just maybe like four guys were out and Levine was the only guy on the court. Then maybe he just jacks up 40 shots. But other than that,
like Justin Holiday, he's plays 39 minutes a game. He's never missed a game, so you can't count on it. But you're right. But bad disclaimer: I'm not playing these guys.
Speaking of low totals, the next 8 o'clock game is the Pistons and the Grizzlies. This one's even lower at 198.5.
You don't see a lot of under 200 overs in the NBA in 2019. I'll tell you that much. So.
Well, it's really funny too. So that total is at. Excuse me. I guess it's ticked up a little. No, it's at 199. We have it at 201. So we are basically right on the total for this game. So sometimes you see like, oh my God, can we really score under 200 points in a basketball game? By comparison, we're right on the total for the Magic and the Bulls as well at 199.85 and then 201.75 for the Pistons and Grizzlies. This thing's just going to be a grind fest. The Pistons are on the back-to-back, so I don't know if you want to give a little extra juice to the Grizzlies, knowing that the Pistons just played last night. But, I mean, other than that, I hate to skip two games in a row because it's a big slate. It just seems like there's so many more fantasy-viable games. This one feels like basically only like an 8 p.m. only slate if you're interested in getting into it. But, I mean, am I missing anything here? I did see Andre Drummond's name kind of jumping around here a little bit on DraftKings, which makes me really, really worried when I see stuff like that. Thoughts on this game at all?
Yeah, well, so the Drummond thing on DraftKings is just the price. Right now, Drummond is 9,500 on FanDuel. He's 8,100 on DraftKings, and you could see justifying it. I mean, the thing about these Pistons guys, and Drummond in particular, is that you're seeing a big savings on Drummond based on three straight weird game scripts and four out of five weird ones. If we think that, and this can happen to Drummond, I brought this up countless times in the past, but Drummond has more ways to lose his minutes than most people do. And if you think, though, that Drummond is going to be out there for like 35 minutes, it'd be pretty hard for him not to pay an $8,100 price tag against Memphis. You'd have to think that the Pistons will really feel like they need him out there, But the big question will be, can he stay out of foul trouble against Marc Gasol? You know, those really polished offensive centers can give Drummond fits sometimes in terms of being able to stay on the floor. And you could see that happening here for sure. So I could see playing Drummond. He's cheap and you like to see it. If it opens up other really good plays, then I think you at least think about it. But you certainly don't want to go out of your way to prioritize anyone in a game with less than 200 total, unless there's like some dramatic opportunity that opens up and you have a $3,500 player playing 40 minutes or something. So yeah, overall, not pumped about this one.
Yeah, I land there with you. And it's one of those things too, like at 8,100, this does offer some tournament upside because no one's going to play this guy at all. Like, so if you think that, like, if you want to kind of jump on a low price because of the matchup and the and a game where maybe he just guards Gasol and he plays 36 minutes, then I do think there's is probably upside just at the price. And look, people are going to see this and know sort of on its face that this is not the spot that you want to be in. All right, other 8 o'clock game is Minnesota goes in and plays Boston. The injury news here is all around the point guards. We have Kyrie Irving is questionable to play right now. He had an eye issue and right eye irritation. I think he got poked in the eye, so I'm not sure where, if his status is maybe even closer to doubtful. We'll have to see how that goes during the course of the day. Derrick Rose is doubtful, and Jeff Teague is questionable for Minnesota. This could be a situation where if Kyrie was out, would we? Do you think we'd be going down like the Terry Rozier path, like or the Marcus Smart gets the start? I hate to do it because anytime Marcus Smart, that's just like this seems like a recipe for disaster. I guess it'd be more about the Terry Rozier thing. He's 5,300 on DraftKings, and I'm gonna check his
43 on FanDuel.
Yeah, and the FanDuel one is actually probably that would be the one.
Snap play him on FanDuel at 4,300.
You think so? Okay, all right. Absolutely. So yeah, that was like sort of my question. Is that If he was in the starting lineup, would we go like, you know, 32 minutes on him, something like that? And at that point, do you think he would just end up being like he would strike me as the perfect kind of FanDuel play for this slate on a, because you know, it looks like there's a lot of value, especially in the bigs and the centers, the power forwards, the Davises and the Randalls of the world, with point guard and shooting guard being the problem. You think Rozier would be like, you think he'd just end up being the chalk if Irving was out?
I think so. He played 31 minutes in the game Irving missed against New Orleans in December, and then they just left him out there for like 35 minutes in the next game just because they liked what they saw, I think. So, yeah, I think Rozier would be the chalk, and understandably so. He's a guy, like when we've, in our ebooks, if you head on over to dfsr.com/ebook, you can get a free copy of this book. But we talk about what makes a good punt play, and what really makes a good punt play is exactly a guy like Rozier, who's priced like a backup, but he's one of those backups where you're kind of like, I don't know, he kind of gets you 20 fantasy points a game on this price, you know, even though he plays 20 minutes. If you can give that guy 15 more minutes, he becomes an auto lock. So, yeah, I would be really excited to play Rozier if I had the opportunity here.
I'm hoping with this eye thing that this is something they kind of figure out and shoot around rather than like testing and warm-ups.
You think so, right?
Yeah, you would hope so. I mean, the Celtics, I will say the Celtics are pretty decent. The teams that we want to label as like good at reporting injury information, I would call the Celtics decent at it, right? Like there's some that obviously like Minnesota at the beginning of the year where they were just a disaster. Obviously the Pelicans thing with Anthony Davis, total disaster. Boston has done a pretty good job. I'm probably making this up, but it seems like, I'm just trying to think of the teams that I think of as being bad. I do not think of Boston as being one of those teams. It always seems like we're getting pretty good accurate information out of them early and sort of knowing what's coming down the pike. So hopefully we know after shoot around what the deal with him is. And then in Minnesota, they have a bad matchup here against Boston. Boston's good defensively, sort of no matter who they throw out there. Teague coming back to me really just muddies the water in terms of where I really want to go with their value. The one guy that is sort of showing up for us right now is Karl-Anthony Towns on DraftKings at 9,600. 9,600 against the Celtics seems like maybe not where I want to be. And I'm just wondering, you know, when you see that name in this matchup, does that make you kind of question what's going on here? Do you think it's, because it doesn't seem necessarily cheap to me. And of course, he has tremendous upside in the right kind of game script.
Yeah, so the thing with Towns is we really want to go back and look at the inputs. I actually manually boosted him in advance of that New Orleans game because the rebounding has been so ridiculous recently, and I wasn't exactly sure what to do with it. It seemed to come out of nowhere where he had gone 20, 19, and 18 rebounds, and the more I thought about it and the more I was looking at it, I was like, and it looked like he was going to be chalking that New Orleans game on New Year's Eve too, and he was close enough to our lineups where I was like, I don't know. I gave him a few more shots and a few more rebounds, and I told everyone, gave him a fair warning that he was now projected on the higher end of what could reasonably be expected, and he just went out there and hit it. I mean, he just got 70 fantasy points. He went out for 28 and 17. And if you think this rebounding renaissance is legit, then I think Towns is still a value. It's really hard for anyone to sustain what amounts to 18 rebounds a game. I suspect that getting from 13 to 18 rebounds a game is probably mostly an effort thing. And if he's out there just going absolutely all out every single game, then sure, he can be worth these prices. But, you know, people tend to not be able to sustain that level of energy and input. So that's kind of my take on Towns. It's all just comes down to this new rebounding bump. If it's real, he's great. If not, then he's overpriced.
Yeah, I'm always a little worried about stuff like that.
I know, me too. And it worked out the one game, so I've got a one game sample of it working. But I'm with you. I'm just explaining why he looks high in our system right now.
Right now, I did take that rebounding bump off of him, and we have him at like something like 27 points and 14 rebounds. And 14 rebounds to me seems.
Even correct. That seems really high.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, so
the if 17, you're 27 and 14 over the course of the season, you're like the consensus MVP. And right, right. So one of the best teams is really hard.
And I get what you're saying. He's averaged like 18 and a half rebounds a game over the last four games. And that is as good as it gets. But that was after a stretch of 4, 6, and 8. Now the minutes came and went there too. The other thing too is when his minutes have been consistently high, 37, 37, 43, 35, you are going to see those numbers sustain a little bit higher. And I think that that's probably... It's a little higher than I want to be. Also, he has...
Well, one thing real quick is that you didn't mention, and I see that you didn't change on our back end. I also gave him a manual usage increase because he's got the standard query in there right now for Rose being out. But in the last few games, he had been doing more in the last three games with Rose out than he did, you know, whatever, earlier in the season. And yep. I wonder if going into a game, because there's two different things, right? Going into a game, knowing that your high volume point guard is out, I think probably affects your mentality or the team's plan more than like when Rose was a backup, right? And just like, oh, Towns was on the court, but Rose was off. Well, that's a different situation than Rose is now the starter and he's off the court. And I think that's something we want to look at too. Like, what's the right number of shots per game for Karl Anthony Towns? Because I'll tell you, in the last four games, it's been higher than it has over the course of the season. And I think there's good reasoning for it.
Just from a betting angle here, we do have the Celtics are 6-point favorites. We do have them as covering that fairly easily, somewhere around 11 or 12 as a cover. That would probably change, though, with Kyrie Irving news. So that would be one I'd be a little skeptical about putting that in right now because I'd want to have that Kyrie Irving news. I probably want the Teague news, too, although I feel like the total is going to move a little less on the Minnesota side than it would on the Boston side. It would move pretty significantly, although Rozier does cover up a lot of the scoring stuff and is pretty good on defense, too. So maybe it wouldn't actually change that. And the way I think about it, maybe I don't care about the Irving thing going into that. Maybe that does just look like the 6 points could be kind of worth it here for the Celtics side. I'll take a look at that as we get off the show. All right, two more games to go. The 9 o'clock games. Philly goes in and plays the Suns. Philly is on the back-to-back after playing against the Clippers last night. Joel Embiid was questionable going into the game. And when I say questionable, he was very questionable because that news, they were not sure if he was going to play up until about a half hour before the lineups, before the game started. He ended up playing and was excellent. How worried would you be about Embiid going? It's a great matchup here against Phoenix, but how worried would you know that Embiid was questionable going in, but didn't look like the injury was bothering him, but now we're on the second half of a road back-to-back. What do you do with a guy like Embiid in a situation like that?
Yeah, I would exercise caution with Embiid. I think there's a chance that the Sixers play it cool with him. They obviously have no reason to risk him right now. And even in the last two games that he did play, he played just 32 minutes against Utah. He played 35 minutes. It was amazing against the Clippers. But at a big slate, I just don't think he's the big money payoff that you need, even in a really good matchup. Unless you get like definitive news, Joel Embiid will be playing, no minutes restriction, whatever. That would be what I'd be looking for because, dude, knee injuries on a big man, especially with how cautious Philly has been with these guys in the past, it seems like they would be nuts to risk it if there's any doubt whatsoever.
Yeah, I think I land there too, and I'm worried that we don't have news ahead of time. Like, this seems like the perfect candidate game to just sit out, right? Like,
schedule win basically against a terrible team. Like, yeah,
that's what I mean. So I don't know. Again, maybe the fact that like this game doesn't start so late at 9 o'clock, maybe we know, maybe they do a shoot around this morning. I'm not sure on the back to backs, like what the Sixers plan is. Like, I don't know if they even have shoot arounds just because they played last night. So, this is one I doubt we'll have the news. And I would put it like 50% I'm making this up, but like 50% chance Embiid plays tonight, which is really going to stink too, because if he didn't play, then obviously Simmons and Butler become almost insta plays in this matchup. And I just don't know if we'll have the news in time. So this would be one. I mean, I guess with DraftKings, you can always late swap, but there's no games left at this point. It's only the 9 o'clock, and then there's a 10:30 game. The Butler did get ejected last night, but he's going to play tonight. He got a double technical with him and Avery Bradley. Maybe that helps him on the minutes wise. From a betting angle standpoint, well, two things. One, do you like anything? We have like D'Anthony Melton sort of showing up as a cheaper play. My guess is as more value creeps in over the course of the day, that goes away. And our system has been pretty consistent about liking the Suns covering games in the short term. Now, they've been a couple games where they've been double-digit underdogs and covered. They did not get there against Golden State, but they got there against Denver, got there against OKC. Didn't get there against OKC, and then got there with even the win against Orlando. I feel like we've been a little bit high on Denver because of the scoring they get from guys like Booker and Warren. It's calling them out as liking the plus five here. Would you be comfortable with that kind of bet here in the Suns?
Yeah, I think I would. I think especially on the Embiid news, I could picture the Suns keeping pace. And for DFS purposes, I also really like Melton. I've been enjoying my runs with Melton recently. He's still very cheap. I think the plan in close games is for him to play like 30 minutes or 28 minutes, something like that. And at 4,400 on FanDuel, I think he's just a value. You know, he contributes across the board, can chip in defensively, gets a couple of rebounds. He's not a great scorer, but he does enough around the edges that paying a $4,400 price tag doesn't seem outrageous to me. So I could definitely see playing him as kind of like a, as crazy as it sounds, like a high floor, cheap point guard that lets you pay up elsewhere.
Yeah, I don't see it as much with him. I get why the system likes him, but it's born a lot on these, like the CS7 steals in the last two games. And not to say you can't continue with high levels of steals, but that no one averages this many steals in a game. So if you
that's because DeAndre Melton hasn't been a starter in the NBA before now.
Well, there's no one named DeAndre Melton. There's no one named DeAndre Melton in the NBA. There's a D'Anthony Melton. Is that who you're talking about?
Oh, D'Anthony. Oh, cut me some slack. I was looking at the... I scrolled past DeAndre Jordan.
Okay. Yeah, the seven steals in the last two games does make me feel like those fantasy numbers are going to come down a little bit. He's never going to get a lot of shots here as long as you share the court with Booker.
Well, what's the right number of steals for someone like Melton? Averaging 20 minutes on the season, 1.5 steals a game. That's just great steals numbers. Like that's
yeah, if you want to give him two steals a game, I think is fair. And, you know, 3.5 steals a game is not. So and the only reason is on FanDuel, that makes a big difference. Like that's a lot of points. For his it's basically going 1x on the extra steals. That I think that
yeah. So it's two. He's averaging 2.25 steals every 30 minutes, and that would be. And so instead of three and a half steals,
right? And that's exactly like that's exactly 1x on his price, right? That's like 1x worth of steals, and I just think it's a little too high. That's my. Sure. I get why. And look, he's 4,400, so it's unlikely that he kills you. He could be your drop on FanDuel, and you wouldn't kill yourself on that kind of thing. And I'm just cautioning on if someone is listening out there and just kind of doing fantasy box score looking. You know, I just talked about this with Cornette the other day. Yeah, like sure. With Cornette, they're like, you know, someone said, oh, Cornette looks a little low in the system. And my new snarky remark to that is, oh, what does your system have Cornette at? Because and I know it's a douchey thing to say, and I just can't help myself. But if you look at Cornette, it's like, well, his fantasy logs look great. But then if you think he's going to continue shooting 67% from three, then we can keep projecting him at like 30 points a game, and he's just not going to keep doing that. And that's what he's been doing in the short term. So mostly just cautioning if people are looking at fantasy logs and saying FanDuel points or whatever, and D'Anthony Melton looks great. Does seem like it's on the steals a little bit. All right, final game. OKC, 5.5-point favorites against the Lakers. Lakers, obviously, still without LeBron, have run the guys you would think would play a lot of minutes, although Lonzo Ball did get his minutes chopped. Some last game, guys like Kuzma and Ingram are playing a ton. Josh Hart also playing a ton as they ran him a little bit more at the point guard with Ball sitting out just for sort of no reason except wasn't playing all that well. And then we have OKC who have found a way to basically sustain Paul George and Russell Westbrook as viable fantasy options together at these prices, which I never thought would be possible, but it really, Russ has been able to get his and get Paul George his as well. Could you see stacking these guys together? They're not really showing up for us right now, mostly because the system loves Anthony Davis. I wonder how much people maybe just pivot to the Russ-Paul George kind of thing, even though our system is kind of liking the Davis and Randall part of it.
Well, George is lurking on DraftKings right now. And again, that's a price thing. Right now on FanDuel, he's $10,000, but on DraftKings, he's $9,200. And I think that's a pretty reasonable price. So yeah, I think you could see him show up there. And as far as Russ goes, like, yeah, super good matchup. I think he's going to bring among the highest floors of any of the big money guys. And you play him head-to-head with Anthony Davis, figuring that Davis is going to average a couple more minutes a game and is basically just as involved in his team as Russ is in his. So, I think I'd probably prioritize Davis. over Westbrook right now, but if I wound up with some Westbrook, I wouldn't be upset or anything.
Yeah, the thing you like about, I'm going to go back to George for 1 second. The thing you really like about George right now is he's playing a ton of minutes. He has five of his last 6 games, he's played 37 or more minutes, and the only one against Dallas, they were winning by 20, so they didn't need to. He only played 33. He's also just taking a ton of shots. He's averaging something like 24 and a half shots per game over the last 6. That's just an incredible usage. And it's crazy, too, because like getting that kind of, that's like Durant-level usage when he used to play with Westbrook. And that really is not something we've seen from anybody else over the last couple of years. And now they just seem comfortable running their offense this way. So I think he's one that I'm wondering about, like sort of in the Karl Anthony Towns, do we want to manually bump up a guy because of some increased usage over the short term? George also seems like sort of a candidate for that kind of, for that kind of bump, and maybe need to look a little more closely at. So George is there. Russ, I agree with you. I'd probably rather go Davis. Dennis Schroeder is a guy that you can maybe consider on FanDuel at shooting guard. Shooting guard's pretty weak. He's been playing a decent amount of minutes. I know he comes it off the bench, but he's part of their crunch time unit. He's 5,100. He can actually find some shots in the times where Westbrook is off the court. So just a guy, I think, mostly because shooting guard is looking a little weak. And then the Lakers, you're getting a pretty bad matchup here against OKC. And all those guys have been, all those guys have been price corrected with LeBron being out 3 games. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/deals gets you, the podcast listener, a free 7-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. It's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It concludes our premium members-only chat where people are in there talking sports and basketball all day long, especially leading into lineup lock where we're kind of going through as a group together trying to decide where we're going to land for lineups. So go check it out, dfsr.com/deals. We'll be back again Friday with another NBA podcast. Buddy, enjoy your Wednesday in the NBA.
Oh, I will.